Good morning, everyone. My name is Paul Nuttall. I'm chairing the session today. Glad to see so many people here this morning. After always difficult first thing on after the night before. The paper today, the session today, is Annuities ALM, a Practical Approach, which is very timely with all the changes and movements happening in the credit spreads market. And we've got Chris Seddon and Kelvin Moe to present to us today. Chris qualified as an actuary back in 1979 and joined Legal & General in 1975, and since then has been involved in the acquisitions by both Colonial and then later by CBA. And he's been involved in most areas of life office work, including pricing, product development, reporting, investment and capital management. Kelvin is a manager in the investment management of the Commonwealth Bank of Australia. He's responsible for the investment and asset liability management of the group's life and general insurance business. Part of his role is to undertake performance attribution analysis of the group's annuity portfolio. And prior to joining CBA, Kelvin was working for APRA. So I'll hand it over to Chris. Oh, if you could, when you do ask your questions, if just going to remind you if you could talk into the mic, please.
Thanks, Paul. Thank you for coming. We started a number of months ago thinking about this topic and thought, well, let's just talk about the practicalities of asset liability management as applied to annuities. And so came up with perhaps a bit of a boring title, I suppose, A Practical Approach. By that stage, the title was locked in some months ago. If we'd been inventing the title only a couple of months ago, we would have invented the title that appears underneath that, of understanding risk and volatility in the real world of credit crises, because that's something that has been, I'm sure, in the minds of all of us to a greater or lesser extent over the last few months. But this is very much a practical thing. It's born out of our experience. It's born out of work that we've done. And it's very much real world, and no Greeks are welcome, except perhaps in the audience. Definitely not in the paper. So where are we going? Because of the credit crisis, we'll just put a little bit of context of, well, why is the credit crisis relevant to what we're going to talk about? And then I'll step back and just sort of set the scene a little bit about ALM. And then the key part of the presentation is an attribution model, which Kelvin will take us through. And then at the end, some of the things we've learnt, that if you were thinking of putting this in, here are a few things to be conscious of. Tricks for the beginner. I would like to acknowledge our colleagues at KPMG who are involved in the development of this model. So, why the credit crisis and why is it relevant to this topic? It's the credit crisis, as we all know, has had a significant impact on fixed interest assets, not just talking about annuities, just talking about the whole fixed interest regime. Mostly through credit spread margins, and there's actually been pretty limited downgrades of assets and even probably more limited actual defaults. But certainly very, very large changes to spreads, and you can see some of them there. You know, spreads over bonds for a AAA moving by 133 basis points. I mean, that is huge. And the word that is used by some of our investment colleagues are these are unprecedented. You hear some, you know, hasn't been since then, I don't know, the Depression or some war, pick which war you like. But yeah, unprecedented. And internally people say, but I thought we had some AAA assets. And the answer is yes, but there's a big difference between a Commonwealth Government AAA and some monoline insurer AAA or some other sort of AAA. So massive changes of spreads. So what's the impact? And here's just one example of what that sort of change of spread could do. And this is an annuity portfolio because we're talking about annuities, but it could be for this purpose any portfolio. So let's suppose that you have a $1 billion portfolio with a 3-year average duration, and it's a highly rated portfolio, 50% in AAAs and 50% in AAAs. And let's suppose that the expected profitability is 10 basis points. Now, that's low and deliberately chosen low to sort of point out what happens here. But if you had chosen the bond rate, the government bond rate, as your risk-free rate, your expected profitability, 10 basis points, is only $1 million a year. But that movement of credit spreads means that you've just suffered a capital loss of $46 million as a result of that credit spread movement. If you'd chosen a swap yield as your risk-free rate, then you've suffered a loss of $23 million. Now, even if you had said, well, oh, that 10 basis points is so low, I mean, expected profitability is, you know, 3 times or 5 times or 10 times that amount. The capital loss that you've just incurred still totally swamps what you expect as your profitability. So the credit crisis is very real. It's impacted anybody who's investing has a fixed interest portfolio, whatever are the liabilities that that you're backing. And that's just looking at the actual credit spread movement. If you've also, if there have also been migrations of credit spreads, a AAA has become a AA, a AA has become a single A, then that's a further loss. That's not really incorporated in the numbers that we just talked about. Or if you've actually had exposure to something which is defaulted, that's a further loss that you will have incurred. And then there may have been just an ordinary yield curve movements which have caused you some sort of further loss. So it's a very real issue. And the difficulty is to try to understand the profitability, the profit or loss, through those number of factors. You might say, well, here's the total figure, but how do you actually come up with some attribution of that? How much is due to a credit spread movement? How much is due to the fact that the yield curve has moved? And it's not straightforward to segregate the impact of different influences on investment return. But as we've seen, investment profit or loss can be multiples of your expected profit. And behind our presentation here, which is really talking about the tools, it's important to realise that this is all part of our advice and our role as actuaries to advise management. And how are we communicating to management the drivers of their business and what are the expected profitability, but also understand what the experience is. So we do need a systematic methodology for attributing investment returns. So let's step back and just set the scene for a moment about why, put this in a bit of a broader context of ALM. So we're defining ALM for this purpose as understanding and managing the interaction between asset-related risk drivers and liability-related risk drivers with the purpose of aligning risks within the risk objectives and appetite of the business. ALM is not about removing risk or eliminating risk, but it is about understanding risk, and it is about living within or trying to live within and explaining if you're not living within the risk appetite of the business, which might be very low or very high. So that's what we're saying is ALM. We are defining ALM as being asset liability management. Sometimes it's called asset liability matching. Sometimes, yesterday I heard the expression asset liability modelling, but at least for the purposes of this presentation, how long it lasts, we're referring to management. But matching is definitely an important part of it, and as we go through an example later, we'll see the impact of matching or not being matched. But we always, I find, in the real world, need to be careful when we talk about matching. And I've used the expression in the past too when someone else has asked, oh, how's our annuity portfolio? Is it matched? I say, oh, yes, our annuity portfolio is well matched. But I have one understanding or one concept when I say that. The person who's hearing me might not understand what I meant. So I might say, well, it's matched because I'm thinking that the portfolio has a close duration matching. It's the duration of its assets and liabilities are closely matched, and therefore I think, oh, well, it's well matched. But the cash flows might not be well matched at all, and therefore there might be causes of investment volatility. You might have the exact duration, but your cash flows might be quite mismatched. And if you go through a process of you have yield curve movements, then you might create investment profit or losses, and then gets the question, but I thought our portfolio was well matched. So what do we mean by matching? So My caution is we always need to be careful in communicating, nothing new, but in communicating what we mean. And the further a person away is from the message, more important is to make sure that we've defined what we mean. So we're making the assumptions that if you're managing this annuity portfolio, in this case, or it could be other portfolios, but we're focusing on annuities, that you've already gone through a process of defining what are your business drivers, what are your aims around managing an annuity portfolio. You've worked through issues of your capital requirements. Are you looking to have a target return on capital? Or do you have a target level of profitability? Do you have a target level of volatility? We assume that you've gone through that process and that you've developed an investment strategy in line with the risk appetite of the business. So you've taken into account interests of policyholders and shareholders. Of course, for policyholders, if they're non-participating in annuities, well, their benefits are largely defined, but you might have participating annuities, or if you extend this example beyond annuities, you certainly need to take account of both interests of policyholders and shareholders in coming up with your investment strategy. So assume that you've thought through all those things, and here you are managing an annuity portfolio. We also assume that you're doing a proper analysis of profit. So when you owe for a month or for a valuation period, whatever period is under consideration, that you're coming up with your analysis of why the profit is what it is, and you've broken down that profit into its relevant sources. You've talked about profit margins. You might have talked about a loss reversal. You might have talked about the impact of model changes or data impacts. You've talked about, you know, here's a mortality profit or loss, you're through expenses or commission, whatever else, and then you have this investment profit or loss item. And we really are focusing in here and on this model that we're going to talk about is to, yes, but what caused the investment profit or loss? You say, well, I'm satisfied that we made a $5 million loss in this profit. I have no unexplained profit. Here are all the other causes. I've made $5 million profit. And then the management says to you, yes, but what caused that $5 million profit? And what is the answer going to be? Also, the actions that are as a result of understanding this investment profit are really outside the scope of this, of what we're talking about today. We were looking just to help to talk about a tool which helps us to provide understanding into investment profitability and to enable us to communicate that with management. And why does investment profit, why is it volatile? Partly it's a result of IFRS. And I've said many times, if IFRS had the intention of creating volatility, it's been very successful. Previously, of course, you could value your assets and liabilities using the same discount rates. So whatever is the yield on your assets, that was the yield that you then took to value your liabilities. So you largely, you could make investment profits, but you're largely immunised from that. Now you're choosing a risk-free rate to value your liabilities. Maybe a bond rate. In this presentation, we've talked about using a swap rate as the risk-free rate. But, of course, the assets are doing whatever they're doing. So volatility as a result of IFRS, as a result of yield curve movements, credit spreads. So we need to understand how much of that profit or loss is attributable to those various factors. And we want to talk to you now about an attribution model which will help us to do that.
Thank you, Chris, for the introduction. The second part of today's presentation will be on the attribution model itself. Now, as Chris has explained, normally in an analysis of profit process, you will end up with an item called investment profit. And what we have shown is that that item can be quite large within the overall profits of the annuity portfolio. And so it is useful to break that investment profit down into various components. And as Chris has mentioned, it can be caused by various items which may need to be managed in different ways. The objective of the attribution analysis process is to break down the investment profit or loss into various factors. I must note at the start that there is more than one way of doing such an attribution analysis, and the way that we are presenting is the way that we do it, but there are many other valid ways of performing an attribution analysis. What we are going to do is to break investment income or investment profit and loss into largely two groups of factors. There are many other factors that are involved, but we'll, for the purposes of this presentation, we'll deal with two main groups of factors. Firstly, something what we call income, which is really the unwinding of the market yield of the assets or the risk-free discount rate for the liabilities, and also market value factors, which are really changes in the market yields and discount rates due to changes in yield curves, credit spreads, and the like. So we'll go through those factors in more detail. As stated before, the income factors represent the unwinding of the market yields and the risk-free discount rates. It's basically, there are various ways of doing this, but the way that we chose to do this is to get the market value of your assets or the liabilities at the beginning of the period, and then multiply by the market yield or the discount rate with various adjustments for cash flows and so forth. On the asset side, the market yield can be decomposed into a risk-free rate, so whether it's a bond or whether it's a swap, depending on your accounting policies, and the credit spread, which is the difference between what your actual yield is and the risk-free rate. There are various ways of calculating what the spread is, depending on your sort of data availability and the assets that you're actually holding. What can be done is to have a look at the cash flow projections of your assets and then solve for a constant credit spread, which can be added to the risk-free yield curve so that the present value of the cash flows matches up. There'll be a residual component in terms of this analysis, and what we call calendar income is really due to the way that the formulas work and the assumption that's implied in the formula that the yield curve's flat and when it's actually not. The second group of factors is what we call market value factors, and they represent changes in market yields and other discount rates, which affects the value of the assets and liabilities. So there are, again, various types as we sort of drill deeper into the analysis. The first set of factors is the change in market value due to the change in the yield curve over the analysis period. And we can break this down into two components. The first component is the change in market value as a result of parallel shifts of the yield curve. Now, you can define the parallel movements any way you like. For us, it's helpful to define this parallel movement as the change in the yield at the duration of the assets and liabilities. That way, you'll be able to measure the effectiveness or lack thereof of a duration matching strategy. Now, you may have different ALM strategies in relation to the portfolio, and so there is scope for differences in the way that you choose where to calculate the parallel shift. The second component is then the change in the market value as a result of non-parallel movements of the yield curve, and that's basically what's left after taking into account the parallel movements. And we'll illustrate that a little bit later. The second factor in the change in market value due to change is due to changes in credit characteristics. Now, that can be driven by a credit migration, so one of your assets got upgraded or downgraded, and also movements in credit spreads for a particular credit rating. And so that's sort of like how much the market expects to be rewarded given the credit risk implied by a particular credit rating. Now, since under IFRS, liabilities are valued at the risk-free rate, that won't appear on the liability side of the analysis. And then finally, there may be changes in market value due to changes in inflation assumptions and the like. What we have here is an illustration of the changes in yield curves, the factors related to changes in the yield curve. So what we have here is two yield curves. The blue one is representing the yield curve at, say, the beginning of the analysis period, and the pink one representing the curve at the end. Now, if we choose a term, I'm leaving the mic here, and we can define that term there as the point at which we define the parallel shift. And so what we can do is just to shift the blue curve upwards to where it meets the pink curve. And what you can see is the dotted blue curve. And we can define the movement due to changes, parallel changes in the yield curve as the market value movement when you revalue assets using the dotted blue line there. And then the remaining component from the dotted blue line to the pink line, what you have there is the return due to non-parallel changes in the yield curve. What we're going to do now is just to briefly describe the annuity attribution process. Again, I want to emphasize that there is more than one way to do this, and the approach that you are going to use will depend on various things, such as availability of data and also what you believe makes the most sense to management, given the nature of your business. What we first need is cash flow projections for assets and liabilities. Now, as part of your liability valuation process, you'll have an existing process to project liability cash flows, which you can basically just use. Now, on the asset side, however, you may need to have a look at how you provide cash flow projections for your assets. You may need to adapt an existing model, or you may need to build a new one. What we found when we tried to implement this is that the model is actually quite sensitive to how you project cash flows and when exactly do cash flows occur. Most securities have ex-couponed or ex-dividend periods. Depending on the exact type of security, it can be 7 or 8 days, it could be 15 days, it could be 18 days, it could be up to 3 weeks. And because what we are trying to do is to explain the change in the market value, which can be cum dividend or ex-dividend or and so forth, we need to model the cash flows as occurring on the depending on exactly what date that they arrive, we need to model the cash flows as occurring on the ex-distribution dates rather than the exact payment dates. Otherwise, you'll end up with cash flows not matching the market values that you observe, and it will significantly distort the results. Now, ideally, what you want to do on the asset side is to perform the analysis at a security level, so you do the attribution security by security, but that may not necessarily be possible in your case, and if you don't have the data or if there may be some issues with systems or data and so forth, it is possible to do this at the portfolio level. This is basically the process. So we start off by separating the asset market yields into the risk-free rates and the credit spread. You can calculate the income factors by the formula there, I think. And there are sort of various residual components which you need to use, but that's basically the generic formula that we use. Again, there are other formulae that you can use to calculate income. And then the market value factors, you can get by it's quite similar to the standard analysis for profit process. So you start off with yield and discount rate position at the beginning of the analysis period, change one factor at a time, and then revalue the assets and liabilities, and then the profit and loss associated with that factor is simply just the change in assets minus change in liabilities. And so, for example, profit due to yield curve movements, you value assets and liabilities using the risk-free yield, yield curve at the beginning of the period, and then you revalue them using a shifted yield curve, and then just take the difference. What we're going to do now is to provide a simple example of the process, and with this example, we'll illustrate how the attribution, at least how the how attribution can be used to explain to management, the outcomes of market movements and so forth, and also we'll consider how different matching approaches will deliver different profit and loss outcomes. So here is the setup. We've got two portfolios which we will compare. This slide shows the assets and liability cash flows for the first portfolio. What you'll notice that it's completely cash flow matched, and so you've got the liabilities are in the sort of purple, dark purple, and the asset cash flows as these light purple blue columns. This particular portfolio is backed by a credit-wrapped structured finance asset, which nominally has a rating of AAA. There have been some talk by the rating agencies of appending suffixes to their ratings to indicate it's structured finance and so forth. But nevertheless, it's a AAA rated security. And we'll have a look at the second portfolio. This one is a portfolio that is a duration match. Now, the liability cash flows are exactly the same as the first one, but the asset cash flow profile is different. What we have here is that the liabilities are matched by two separate assets with different maturity dates, different credit characteristics. So the one on the left here is basically the same AAA structured credit asset that we have in the first portfolio, and then we've got the longer one, which is sort of more conventional AA rated bond. Now, the assets are weighted, so that the duration of the asset portfolio is matched to the duration of the liability portfolio, which is about eight periods, period eight there. Next, we'll look at the market changes that have occurred during our analysis period. This slide shows the hypothetical risk-free yield curves at the beginning and the end of the period. So what you have is the blue line representing the yield curve at the start of the period, the pink line representing the yield curve at the end, and we have an upward shift of around 51 basis points at period 8, which is where the duration of the assets and liabilities are. What you'll see is that the upward movement is much more significant at the longer end of the curve than it is at the shorter end, which coincidentally is what happened during April. This slide shows the movements in credit spreads of the two assets that we have considered during the analysis period. So the AAA rated asset has widened substantially from 15 to 60 basis points, while the spread of the AA rated asset has just widened slightly from 60 to 70 basis points. As you would recall, the first portfolio only invested in the AAA rated asset, and so we should expect a significant loss due to the widening of credit spreads for that asset, while our second portfolio invested in a mixture asset, and so we should expect a loss, but a slightly lower one for the second portfolio. Now, if we run through the attribution process on this example setup, we will arrive at these results. So these are the results for the first portfolio. What you'll see here is that the impact from yield curve movements is close to zero. But what we can see is a loss of 2.3 as a result of widening of asset spreads during the period. Now, that is quite substantial, especially when the present value of the assets in this particular case is about 80. And so the loss here is about 3% of the assets. And that's what we have sort of experienced during the last few months, is that the investment profit and loss can be quite substantial as a percentage of assets. This slide shows the attribution results for the second portfolio, which is the duration match portfolio. There are a few things that we can talk about from these results. The first one is that we have a positive shift return, which is the parallel yield curve movement return of about 0.1, but we have a significant loss from the twist, which is the non-parallel movement in the yield curve of about 0.8. That's because the movement in the risk-free curve is much larger at the longer end, and so the impact is higher on the asset side than on the liability side, because we've got more asset cash flows which are exposed to the longer end of the curve than we have liability cash flows. And so what we can say is, while duration matching provides some protection against parallel shifts of the yield curve, it doesn't provide much protection against non-parallel movements in the yield curve. The second thing we can say is that the return from credit spreads is a loss of 1, which, as expected, is lower than the loss under the previous first portfolio of 2.3. So, this slide summarises the major findings from the example. We managed to explain almost all of the investment experience into various factors, and provides much more helpful information to management regarding the profit and loss volatility of the portfolio than just a single investment profit or investment loss number. And what we have shown is that duration matching may not necessarily work during significant volatility in the yield curve, as we have experienced over the last few months. The same process can be used to stress test the portfolio. And so what you can do is define various scenarios in terms of yield curves and credit spread movements, and then use exactly the same process to analyse the impact of these movements on the portfolios. And then the results can be used for various things like testing different investment strategies or different hedging strategies to hedge out the market risk, or setting the level of capital that is required to support the portfolio. I'll hand back over to Chris for tricks for the beginner.
Just conscious we've got just a little over 15 minutes before we finish. So if anyone's got any questions at this stage, do you want to come and ask them now? Because Chris has got another half a dozen or so slides to go. So if you've got any burning questions, please feel free to ask them now. If you can come up to the microphone as well, please, and say your name. Thank you.
Hi, Peter Costabin from Ericsson's. The question I've got is, I noticed the residual was quite small. I know from doing other attribution analysis, not necessary this type, that second-order effects can be quite large. Did you find any circumstances where they were significant?
Usually when cash flows occur during the period, so we assume that there are no assets and liability cash flows during the period. Now, if you have cash flows during the period, then depending on exactly how you do the modelling and the movements of the yield curve during from the beginning of the analysis period to the time where the cash flow occurs. If there are significant movements, then you have to make certain assumptions about how to divide up the income into various components, and in those instances, you would see some residuals.
It was a bit surprising for me to see that your first portfolio seems to me is completely matched.
Mm.
Those things.
Yeah.
And then yet the result shows that it's minus 2.3 versus minus 1.6. Any intuitive reason why that happens?
The reason for that is basically the credit spreads have moved much more significantly in the first portfolio than the second one. And so that's why there's a significant sort of a deviation in the way that profit results come out. What we have found over the last few months is that in relation to AAA assets, is that the spreads for the true government AAAs have moved. They have moved, but not as significantly as some of the more structured type of AAA securities. And so that's why, even though you may have a cash flow match portfolio, you can still see a lot of volatility just because of the way IFRS works.
In the first example, the shift
return. The shift return and the twist return were both zero because the portfolios were both duration matched and cash flow matched. So you shouldn't see any profit or loss arising as a result of those. And in the second portfolio, you still had, you know, virtually no impact from a parallel shift because of the duration matching. But this is evidence to this model helps you to prove that, to be able to say, because our portfolio is in this state, this is the impact of a shift. This is the impact of the yield curve moving, and this is the impact of the credit spread and other features as well. It helps you to understand the attribution of that result.
Just a quick question probably for Chris. Chris, at the outset you talked about you were doing this for management, if you like, to answer the question they had, why. What's been their reaction to the findings?
It's still reasonably early days as far as that, but I think it's just so we haven't really got to the point of saying, as a result of now understanding this portfolio, what are we going to change? But I think it's helping people to understand the risk appetite and the risk in the portfolio. But as we sort of roll this out, when we're producing this monthly at the moment, as we roll that out month by month, and people are seeing what's in the market and seeing the impact. It's at this stage still an education phase. But I think as people understand that, then the question will be, well, is the investment strategy right? Do we want to improve our cash flow matching? Do we want to increase or reduce the risk we're taking? Do we want to change the credit profile of the portfolio? All those sorts of questions. So tricks for the beginner, what are some practical issues? And I realise here I'm really raising issues and questions, not necessarily providing answers. The first one is to ensure that you align with management reporting. So it might sound obvious to say that the asset values in your attribution model agree with the asset values that are in your investments asset registry system, which agree with the ones in the general ledger, but don't take that for granted. You might have a main portfolio of investment assets, but there might be some cash in the bank. Well, the cash in the bank's also going to contribute to that, but have you built that into your attribution model? To ensure the investment income that you're analysing that's coming through is the same as the investment income that's in the ledger. Presumably, your valuation result, your analysis of profit is picking up your investment income in the ledger and analysing that, but is that the investment income that's actually being produced by the way that you're modelling your assets in your attribution model? and to ensure that the liability values also, the way that you projected your liability values from, you know, your actual evaluation, is that consistent with the liability values that are occurring in your attribution model as well? You just don't want leakage. Kelvin referred to a timing of something going X or not. You may make an assumption that this government bond was actually going to pay its coupon on the 15th of January, but did you actually receive it on the 15th of January? And if you didn't receive it, then you might have not recognised the investment income in the ledger when you're actually expecting your attribution model to have produced that income. Another one is we've talked about the swap curve as being the basis of a risk-free curve. But the swap curve is actually only available, or the swaps are only available at certain points, and you need to derive, really, for this purpose, a continuous swap curve. And how are you going to do that? So you need to consider various different sort of interpolation methodology. I mean, there are all sorts of ones you could consider as to how you're actually going to drive out that, because you want to be able to value a cash flow at every month for the next however many years. So how are you going to derive that? And then also points in the curve, whether swap or bond curves, there aren't too many points once you get out past sort of 15 or 20 years. And yet if you have long-term, even a 25-year term, so if you have lifetime annuities, you have some long cash flows there. So how are you going to set your assumptions and extrapolate to get your curve beyond that point? And it can be relatively sensitive. Are you just going to assume that the 20-year swap rate is the same as the 25-year or the 30-year or the 35? Are you going to try and fit some curve to go out beyond where the data points are? Inflation is an interesting one. Potentially, you might have a mismatch between your index-linked assets and liabilities. So you might have $100 million worth of index-linked assets, but your CPI-linked liabilities might be $50 million or $150 million, so you automatically have a mismatch, which can cause an element of noise or volatility in your result. And even so, even if you have $100 million of both, they might not have the same cash flows. And then you have different assumptions. Typically, an indexed asset will have built into its market value an assumption about what inflation is. But typically it's based on fairly recent historical inflation, which may not be your view about what is an appropriate inflation rate to set for that asset in future. And then what inflation assumption are you setting for your CPI-linked liabilities? And you might have different people setting these assumptions. You might have sort of an investment view about setting what the inflation is going to be on an asset. You might have the actuary saying, well, this is how I'm going to value my liabilities, and this is the inflation assumption I'm setting. So it can cause noise, and therefore you can pull inflation out as being another attribute in this analysis. Transactions and cash flows can be relevant. Typically, you base this on end-of-month data, and the process can just be that you assume that all of your end-of-month assets and liabilities were also there at the beginning of the month, and you go through these various yield shifts that Kelvin talked about to work out how much is the parallel shift movement. But in practice, that's not the case. You're writing new business, so you have some of your liability cash flows weren't there at the beginning of the period, and therefore you need to adjust for that. And then if you're buying and selling assets, some of your asset cash flows have also changed. So beware of that. And frequency of analysis, we're doing this monthly. If you do it monthly, it is more accurate. Small changes don't have as much impact in the residual items. And assumptions about cash flows are not as significant if you're only dealing about a cash flow which has been there or not been there for half a month. If you do this for a six-month period, it's much harder then to make sure that the attribution is all working accurately, and some of these assumptions that you're making about cash flows during a period, if you have a lumpy cash flow one day after the beginning of the six-month period or one day before the end, that can cause more noise in the analysis. So monthly is preferable, but it is more labour-intensive, and you need to be reconciling your results, going through this process every month. But if possible, that's what we would recommend. So, in conclusion, you know, investment profit can be large, and it can be large relative to some of your other experience items. And this model is trying to give you insight into the causes and to enhance your understanding of your portfolio. And as sort of following up on David's question, you know, this can lead to, you know, a review of, well, what is your risk appetite? Do you know that this is the level of risk you are taking in this portfolio? Do you know that this is the potential volatility of your portfolio? You know, as a result of this, as I say, you may say, well, I'm happy that I'm duration matched, but are you happy with the level of cash flow matching? And should you try to go to a more precise cash flow matching approach? Should you try to hedge it in certain ways? And then I'll lead it into your investment, the whole investment strategy and risk appetite for that business. There hasn't been any for us, any impact in terms of our capital requirement as yet in understanding. I think, as I said, this is still fairly early in terms of, you know, rolling out these results month by month and understanding the impact. But as yet, there isn't, there hasn't been any flows through into capital. But potentially, this is just getting you greater insight into the nature of your portfolio, into the risks that you are taking. And, you know, the recent months with credit impacts has clearly has swamped other impacts. So it's interesting to see, though, because, you know, the level, you know, duration match and therefore what's the shift movement, you know, cash flow match, what's the twist movement. It's interesting to see just the level of result that comes out of that. And therefore, you know, people say, could potentially say, oh, well, you're not cash flow matched. You know, you should be cash flow matched. But the question is, but do you understand the level of volatility that it actually generates? And are you comfortable with that level of volatility? And then, yes, potentially, you know, if you're too far away, you may decide, well, that you may need to hold more capital.
John Slack. Chris, a comment and a question. I guess the comment, when we talk about duration matching, that implies a discount rate. So it seems to me you can either discount, if you like, at the swap rate to get reduced volatility on the IFRS result, or you can discount at your capital adequacy rate to reduce your volatility of the capital you might need. We certainly use the swap approach. I don't know about yourself. And mm-hmm. That was a question, not a comment. And the second one is this investment experience. I don't know whether you separate your profits between operating profit and return on capital earnings. Is this deemed to be an investment experience on the operating profit, or is it part of the return on capital?
Yeah, it is separated. We treat it as part of the operating profit. Yeah, the return on capital is a separate measure. Yeah.
Time's gone.
I think that's the first bell, so that's the one.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Firstly, my apologies for being just those few minutes late, and I hope my question therefore hasn't been covered in those few minutes. But from what I observe of this, the application is for what I would term guaranteed annuities.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to form a minor part of the major annuity portfolio, the others of which are the account-based pensions. But it seems to me that they themselves represent a series of one-year guaranteed pensions. Have you thought about the application of those, if you're doing it on a monthly cycle, application of this model to those annuities? And what would that do to the fact that they're probably backed by an entirely different asset backing?
Mm. Short answer, no. Haven't really thought about that. That's a good question.
It seems to me that the model could
be extended. And look, we're focused here on annuities, but there are other, you can think of other liability cash flows where this might be relevant, where you have a fairly well-known you know, set of cash flows, and we're focused on on an annuity portfolio backed by fixed interest assets. You know, you may not do that. You may have, you know, you might have annuities portfolios where there are other asset classes involved, and therefore, you know, you need to modify things. Let's just say I'm breathing a lot more easily that we had it in before the credit crisis came on. Most days I'm going, boy, I'm glad we had this. Because, yeah, the questions where it was difficult to explain as to where the investment experience was coming from beforehand. And you really had to do a lot of work going back and looking at individual securities and going back at looking at individual assets and digging down and almost manually looking at each assets, pulling out their cash flows, looking at their changes in market value, look at anything, speaking to investment people, did anything funny happen about this asset? And they said, oh, yes, well, that was restructured and something else happened. So the best thing is that this has put in place, you know, in a sense, automated. I say automated, Kilwin does a lot of work to actually get this done every month. But an automated solution to drive out those attributions. So over recent months, it's been great to have a tool which will automatically give us this. And when, you know, we work in CBA and credit, I don't need to explain sort of the focus there is on credit and the impact on the bank. So we can automatically say, well, this is the impact of the credit crisis in this portfolio. And we know that that's the impact of the credit crisis, and it's not a result of other factors. It's not a result of the fact that, you know, the yield curve has moved in this way or that way. And that's been a real benefit. They've been able to isolate, you know, in this case, this particular cause. But there might be something else. There may not be no credit thing, and the yield curve, interest rates might be moving all over the place, and then we'll be able to say, well, this is the impact of what's happened, you know, with interest rates, because that's another feature of that. Or if there are, you know, big changes to inflation, we'd be able to say this is the attribution of that.
Thank you.